It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. I'm excited to be back with you on this Thursday. Mike Rogers is standing by. You know Mike Rogers, the former congressman and former chair of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and FBI guy. And then Carly Shimkus at the bottom of the hour, who said to me, Brian, what are we talking about? I said, Carly, you could talk about anything. I've been watching you since 4 a.m. And she backed off. But she did have a preference for what's happening with one of my big three. So I'll get to that, too. And I just got to urge you to download the podcast. I can't tell you how many people say, I didn't even know you had a radio show. I just thought you had a podcast. So Brian Kilmeade Show, wherever you get podcasts, just download it. BrianKilmeadeShow.com. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
There's no doubt that Hunter Biden was part of a Chinese intelligence mission that was trying to gather as much information as possible about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the entire Biden family.
But now we got specifics, and this is going to blow you away. Hunter hijinks reaches new heights as new intel reveals one of his assistants or co-workers was a Chinese spy and, by the way, urged him to get his father to run for president and also offered a Chinese strategy for the presidential candidate turned president. The ripple effects are incalculable, but the question is, why was this intel given to and not acquired by the FBI?
Number two.
The spending. Republicans are spending 80% of their money on offense, 20% on defense. The Democrats are the opposite. They're spending 20% of their money on offense and 80% on defense. Over time, that kind of funding difference is going to erode Democratic gains.
Yeah, and that's what's happening right now. Midterm mania reaching new heights as debates, polls, and accusations fly. But could a red wave be stifled? The new congressional generic poll is trending Democrats' way. No joke.
Number one.
We're making serious progress in getting prices close to what they were before the pandemic.
Okay. Joe Biden. President Biden offers a fictional view of the economy in America. What he said and what the numbers show in his blame game strategy, well, it reaches new heights. Or should I say lows? Mike Rogers joins us now. Mike, welcome back.
Brian, it's always good to be back, my friend.
Do not feel bad if you did not know this, because as I read this morning in the New York Post and then watched it on Fox and Friends first, I didn't know this. But James Comer sent a letter. He's going to be the future possibly oversight chair. Sent a letter to FBI Director Wray on Wednesday morning, stating that the committee have documents that reveal that Hunter Biden's business partner and close personal associate was linked to the Chinese Communist Party. In fact, went to one of these universities that FBI guys like you have identified as someone who is trained to be an agent, infiltrated into the company of Hunter Biden, and also with text messages revealed, this is public, already urging Hunter to urge her dad to run for president. I mean, this is pretty substantial, don't you think?
Well, in the FBI, we would call that evidence a clue. It's pretty shocking. Just how aggressive the Chinese are and have been. This isn't anything new. This is something that they've been known to do. And so those connections, I mean, that in and of itself is probably not a crime. I mean, unless they absolutely knew him to be an agent. But what you have to do anytime you're doing business with anyone associated with the government in China is understand that the Ministry of Security for the Chinese Communist Party will use those relationships relentlessly. And so all of that has to be taken into caution. And how that didn't come out earlier, even in the other discussions about the Chinese contract and him traveling with the president to China, that turns a whole new light on all of those activities. And candidly, sunshine is the best sanitation always. boy, it sure just does not look good for them if this is in fact true.
So Mike, the last thing I want to do is get sidetracked to something that doesn't matter and get into politics. The only reason I bring this up, because to me it matters. When Dianne Feinstein's driver for years was a Chinese spy, that's a problem, because you know how many conversations, substantial conversations you have in cars and being transported, especially when you're 3,000 miles away and taking planes and car transportation as much as Senator Feinstein. Now she's got dementia. Who knows what she gave up? And I don't say that gladly, but it's a fact. I don't know how she continues to serve. But when it comes to this Hunter Biden situation, we know CEFC played a vital role in the Belt and Road program designed to give maximum influence of the Chinese government with developing nations, often that are in desperate need of an affluxion of cash, and undermine American influence. He is with part of a company that was building the Belt and Road program, anti-American by its definition and intent. Does that enhance interest?
Oh, completely. Listen, it sounds, again, you know, I'm a big believer in law enforcement being able to decipher to make sure these things are true. But I will say that if you were participating in a company and profiting from a company that is engaged in the Belt and Road Initiative, you are directly working against U.S. interests. Because what the Chinese were doing, and that whole purpose of that program, is to co-opt nations into the sphere of influence of the Chinese Communist Party. Pure and simple. That's exactly why they're doing it. As a matter of fact, they're using debt as a cudgel, meaning in many of these cases that say, okay, well, we'll loan you the money. We'll bring the people to build it. It won't cost you a dime. We'll loan you, quote unquote, the money to do it. And then what happens is some of these countries can't pay it. And so the Chinese say, well, this is no problem. We'll just take over the port or the train rail or the fill in the blank. And we've seen them do it over and over. And this is all by design. And it's all the Communist Party, again, looking to try to knock the U.S. off the stage. And so are there always going to be greedy Americans who think that it's okay to make a few bucks on that? Probably so. But we need to wake up to what is actually happening by the Chinese Communist Party and their interest to supplant U.S. Interest and influence around the world. It's that serious. And here's the crazy thing, Brian. They've been talking about this for years. Chinese will tell you kind of what they're doing, and we just kind of merrily whistle by the graveyard here as we're participating in some of these activities. But knowing how close, and again, this would, if I were an FBI guy today, I would look at that relationship in his office, on Hunter Biden's office, and the trip to China, and when he went with now President Biden. And then there were some contracts, at least it was reported in the press that there were some contracts there. That all needs to be, you got to grab that thread and pull it. And even if he naively fell into all of those things, what that does mean is that we need to expose the length and depth and persistence of the Chinese intelligence services to try to do bad things here in the United States.
So tell me about this Huawei deal. They found an agent. They ended up flipping on him, who tried to compromise an American and get details on the case against Huawei, the famed Chinese telecommunications company. And instead, they were able to lay him out and kind of get him as much information of him as possible. What could you tell me that's been laid out by the federal government about this Chinese spy?
Yeah, and so I'm sure you remember this. Back in 2012, I released, when I was chairman of the Intel Committee, the report that said, hey, we have a problem with Huawei. This is a tool of the Chinese Communist Party state, and they're going to use data collected on those networks to do bad things both here in the United States to our allies abroad. And so this is not a telecommunications company like we would recognize it. It is a tool of the state collection, surveillance state of China. And so that report came out in 2012, and then we have slowly and progressively tried to get people to understand the threats of a company like Huawei telecommunications. By the way, they would come in to you and say, hey, we'll give you a cheap Huawei phone, hardly anything. We'll put your network out in the United States, hardly cost you a penny. And if you look at it, no way they were making money. But they weren't interested in making money. They were interested in collecting data off of those networks. And so what happened is, this is very typical of Chinese intelligence services. They found somebody that was close enough that they believed could get into our federal court system. Remember, this is how aggressive they are, which tells you how we need to change our game here in the United States when it comes to pushing back on Chinese malign efforts around the world, including here. They found somebody they could pick off, try to get back into the court, and steal documents that would help them understand what the federal government, the FBI, was doing to target Huawei connection to the Communist Party in China.
So we have to be aware of this. We know about them buying land around military bases and key farmland to maybe convert it and deny us our own crops. So we have to be aware of this. Do you think this CHIPS deal, which was somewhat bipartisan and originally a Republican idea, do you think this CHIPS deal, it's going to be unveiled today in Syracuse, was part of bringing manufacturing home, is a step in the right direction?
I do. I always get worried about the implementation. That one of the first things the Biden administration said is we're going to create two new departments in commerce and take about $450 million to run it. And I went, okay, well, that tells me we've got problems already. The idea is great. We need to be a lot more nimble. We need to get these companies who we know have capability to do high-performing chips. And right now, 90% of those high-performing chips are produced in Taiwan, which is why China is rattling, part of the reason why China is rattling the saber about taking over Taiwan. And you think we have problems today with supply chain. Wait till China decides they want to go into Taiwan. It will directly impact every one of your listeners in some way, if you're out in the economy in any way. Those chips are so critically important. So it's important. We have to get on it. We have to do it yesterday. We don't need big government programs to implement it. We need very quick action to get the investment that we need. And again, I'm a free market guy. I think you are too, Brian. But what this is we need to protect our defense industrial base.
Yep.
So that if something, God forbid, happens in the world, we are able to produce the things we need to do to keep us safe. And I think CHIPS is a part of that.
And look, it's bipartisan. If I'm running for any office of significance, I say, listen, what I'm going to tell you now should be Republican or Democrat, we should rally around. If you're running on the pro-China stance, it's anti-American. That means you've been bought and sold. And I thoroughly believe that. And if businesses don't understand, there's got to be you have to have a streak of patriotism in you. I'm all for capitalism and free markets, but not at the expense of national security. And the Blackstones of the world and the Nikes of the world have to realize that. Is my statement naive? If you were still chairman of the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, would you have any luck meeting with these major corporations and convincing them to pull out?
Well, I have been doing that, actually, even on the private sector side of things since I left Congress. And it's a tough sell for them because the market is so big. And candidly, they didn't many of these corporations did not want to understand what the threat was. That's why you have there's a whole conversation in America. Oh, it's not too bad. We shouldn't really worry about it. Those are just people who are, sable rattlers. Well, none of that is true. It is a real thing. I mean, and the more of these indictments come out, think of this. Every 10 hours, the FBI opens up a new Chinese espionage case in the United States. Every 10 hours, which tells you that is an unbelievable number. It just pales anything we ever had, and even in the Cold War when it was spy versus spy. And so they're just really aggressive. Mm-hmm. And we are making some headway into understanding that the Chinese just don't have our interests aligned. And by the way, when you put intellectual property and you have to have a business partner that's affiliated with the Chinese state when you do business in China. And by the way, they will steal your intellectual property. And if it's nailed down, they'll steal the nails. They have been very aggressive about trying to do that because what they want to do is move all that intellectual property to China so that they don't have to depend on the United States or anybody else. And they say that, and that's what they're talking about doing. And so we just got to shake ourselves out of it. And as I say, pull our head out of our collective backside here. And this is not, warmongering. It's not saying they can't ever be our friends in the future, but you have to understand the threat as it exists today. And we need to get corporate America aligned with understanding what's at risk for our economic and national security prosperity moving forward.
And Mike, I just want to push back a little on this and tell me if these facts aren't correct. They have ripped out that free market principle that existed for the Jack Ma's to emerge with Alibaba. They've thought that was a threat. They have young people who aren't working or refuse to work. They have a housing bubble that's beginning to crash. They have environmental issues. And they also have the zero COVID policy that has millions of people at a drop of a hat locked in their houses, oftentimes without any food or nourishment. So they do have some issues over there.
Oh, they absolutely have issues. They also have, because of the one-child policy, something on the order of 30 million marrying age adult males more than marrying age adult females. And so they have some economic problems. And what you just saw with President Xi, who's now going to be leader for life here, is that they are worried that they created this fire, which is based on a semi-capitalist system, and it pulled 650 million some Chinese out of poverty and put them into what we would describe as a bit of a middle class. And they understood they were starting to lose control over the grip on the country. So he has gone after some of that free market tenant that allowed some of these people to build, you know, big and successful companies. And he's gone after them, and he's put people in jail, and he calls it corruption. So that will have an impact on their economic growth. Absolutely. And that's a problem. What I worry about is that he spent a lot of time, energy, and money on modernizing the Chinese military. And spending really, you know, the Russian military you see on the battlefield is not the Chinese military you would see on the battlefield. It's very technologically advanced. And so what I worry about is you get all those problems, Brian, and you have a very strong military. And by the way, they just surpassed the United States in the number of ships in their Navy, right? And they've said that they want to compete with the Blue Water Navy of the United States. That just tells me, you know, when you have all those problems you listed, sometimes you go to a military solution, and that's what worries me.
Mike Rogers, thanks so much. Thanks for the coverage.
Thanks, Brian.
When we come back, I'll take your calls. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
6-point advantage, or a 4-point advantage for the Democrats now in the generic congressional ballot when they went up to you and said, forget candidates, what party do you think is better equipped to run Congress? I can't believe it. This has got to be an outlier. It's a YouGov poll. It says Democrats by 4. I don't see it anywhere else. Where now the Cook Report has now moved the Arizona Senate race to, instead of lean left for Kelly, now between Masters and Kelly, it's a flip of the coin. Wow. Incredible. Because Mitch McConnell pulled out money there foolishly and said, let Peter Thiel and let Donald Trump fund it, which is idiocy. If you ever say Donald Trump can be a little juvenile, and I think you're right, what about Mitch McConnell also with Bolduc, who's been critical of him? He won't finance and help him close the gap with Maggie Hassan as they have a debate coming up. There'd be their one and only debate between the two, but she's obviously the most vulnerable one. We know what's happening in Nevada and the seat that they wanted to flip, Pat Toomey's seat in Pennsylvania. I'm going to go over this a little bit later, but you've probably seen the clips. This senator, this Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, is so ill-equipped because of his physical abilities, because of the stroke, because of stroke in May. He cannot do the job. And number two is he's way to the left. How does Pennsylvania switch that much in 6 years? That Pat Toomey, a conservative Republican who won pretty handily, is now going to give his seat over to a left-wing activist in Fetterman? No way.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back. That was Carly Shimkus. I don't know if was that picked up, Allison? Carly laughing unprofessionally right before her introduction. All right, Carly Shimkus, the same. You're the same Carly Shimkus who does Fox and Friends first. And
so
Fox
they
and
say,
Friends.
Yes.
Right.
I hope I am. I was laughing. Can I tell you why I was laughing? Well, you know why I was laughing.
Go ahead.
Because right before we go on, you go, I want to talk about Harry's new book. I thought you were serious.
Right.
It's like, well, I don't have a lot of information on that one. Right. This is it. This is a U-turn.
I'm the anti-royalist in your life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I kind of picked that up.
Right. You knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ainsley balances it out very well, though.
So yesterday I was off, and so I missed. I'm trying to catch up on the news. We got this great e-packet of all the breaking news in it to try to catch up for the one day I lost. And I just said to myself, when I'm reading the story of the Post at the same time I'm watching Brooke Singman deliver
it. Amazing.
In the morning about this Hunter Biden story. I'm like, okay, same thing, different angle about the laptop.
No, nope.
It's not the same thing. What is going – why don't you lay that –
okay, this does – I think this deserves more attention than it's getting. Although, lo and behold, America's –
Miranda Devine.
Newsroom was just talking about it. And we did it on Fox and Friends too. But no, this is new. So there's a woman – her name is Jackie Bao. I had never heard of her before. And she was working with Hunter Biden as either – conflicting reports – either his secretary or some kind of like a business partner type thing. Who is she? Well, apparently she – hold on. She is a Chinese woman who received a degree from a college called Tsinghua University. Why does that matter? Because that college is a recruiting hub for Chinese intelligence service, like their intel service. So then she starts working for the Chinese Communist Party. She works for the government. And then after that, she meets Hunter Biden and starts working with him. And then this is a letter that James Comer has been really digging into all of this. These are his words. He says this to Chris Wray because he wants more information on this woman. He says, after infiltrating the Biden family, Bao urged Hunter to encourage Joe Biden to run for president months before he announced and then supplied the Biden family campaign advice related to China. Why would this woman who essentially went to Chinese spy school be encouraging Hunter Biden to encourage his dad to run for president? And her exact words in a message of some sort that she sent Hunter is, Uncle Joe needs to run for president. And this is the woman that has links to the CCP.
And she could help with China relations. And remember, the one thing that's interesting, do you remember when Joe Biden was talking and say, China's a threat to us? Come on, man.
Yes.
We're not going to eat there. We're going to eat their lunch.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was getting that information from her or was he using his own interpretation?
It's crazy. No, this is crazy stuff. Oh, sorry.
So the other thing that people can keep in mind, in case people are at home going, oh, another crazy Hunter story. It isn't, because we know this. He invested with a company, got over $4 million from CEFC, a Chinese utility company that's direct links to the government. Everything is direct links to the government. And what I think is even worse, it is the engine behind the Belt and Road program, which was created to undermine American interests around the world.
This is exactly right. So here's another line from a Hunter email, because he did get the $4 million, Hunter and his uncle got the $4 million from CEFC. And in an email, he referred to the vice chairman of CEFC, Patrick Ho, as his client and an effing spy chief of China. Are you kidding me? But the big thing is that Hunter was negotiating a deal with this Chinese company to purchase American natural gas. So China wanted to get their foot in the door. They wanted to have greater control over an American natural resource. And they were using Hunter Biden, the now president's son, to facilitate this deal. So take Jackie and all this stuff out of the picture. You still have the vice president's son, now president's son, facilitating this transaction, which undermines national security and a major asset of our country.
What I'm trying to make heads and tails over is, did Jim Comer, who's going to be chairman of oversight if they win the majority, did he really tell the FBI this? And is he telling the FBI? Wait, the FBI should be telling us about this.
I know. He said that he handed the FBI hundreds of documents, apparently.
But where is he getting it from, and who's helping? Here's Matt Whitaker, what he told you this morning, the former attorney general of this country, Cut 35.
There's a lot of crimes involving national security that I'm sure the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office is looking at. I have always felt that in addition to sort of the just the classic political corruption that is contained in this case, there is this national security concern that I think actually elevates it to, you know, a higher level of a case because you just had too many Chinese entanglements in addition to Russian and Ukrainian and other entanglements to not have this start to look like Hunter Biden, especially, you know, as a drug user, was being exploited by intelligence agencies to gather information on his father.
Right. And you have to be careful with this story. The reason he provided that answer is because I asked him the question. A lot of this stuff looks really corrupt. It could undermine our national security. But is there a crime there? Because keep in mind, this CEFC deal went down after Joe was out of office. Right. So he wasn't the vice president at the time. But Matt Whitaker did bring up the fact that Hunter Biden failed to register as a foreign agent, the FARA violation. And FARA requires people who are working on behalf of a foreign government to register if they are trying to influence U.S. politics. And that's something that Hunter Biden never did.
Manafort got solitary confinement for basically that. And so did Tom Barrack is being prosecuted now for his ties to a Middle East firm. And because he was very tight with Trump, did he use some of that influence?
Right.
Okay. Where is that same aggression when it comes to things on the other side?
Also, Matt Whitaker said there's no doubt Hunter Biden was part of a Chinese intelligence mission trying to gather enough info as possible about Joe Biden. It's shocking how much money was given to the Bidens. Am I in an echo chamber? This is a big deal.
And if there was
an R next to these people's names, it would be all over the place.
And it was and remember, he's being investigated for taxes. And he got $1 million from a friend of his just to pay off his back taxes, and it's evidently more. Because when you can make $4.5 million, you know how much the government wants, and there's all these banking. For example, how many red flags were on his bank account on international business dealings questionable origin? Usually one is a big deal. He had dozens.
Yep.
It doesn't seem to matter, but it does matter. And I think eventually it will matter if there's any justice at all in this country. But while this is all happening, he ends up with no money, living on the lam out in California with another rich benefactor who's a producer. And you wonder, what is even the link to Hunter and this producer and the president that he wants to take this crackhead in, along with his brand new wife, while he leaves other kids sprinkled around the country that he may or may not be financing and supporting that he had out of wedlock. So this is the issue, even resonating with Jon Stewart. This is what he said about Burisma, the gas company that he served on the board with. Cut 36.
As far as, like, look, Hunter Biden being on the board of
Burisma,
to me, that's corruption straight up off the bat. The idea that nepotism would allow much larger amounts of money to flow into the hands of people unqualified to be in the positions that they've been accepted because you think those countries are trying to buy influence. I think it's a huge problem on its face.
Yeah. By the way, Hunter was, you know what I think is funny about the Jon Stewart stuff is that every now and then he does say something that's so obvious, but then it becomes a big deal because you're just like yearning for somebody on the other side to say something that makes total sense and, you know, screaming into wind about these types of things. So, that's an obvious point, but thank you for saying it.
We weren't friends then. No, we weren't enemies. We were never enemies, were we?
Never.
Okay, good. But when Jon Stewart was doing The Daily Show, he would take shots at Republicans and Democrats. He would take shots at Republicans, yeah. But he also takes shots at Democrats, too, when they do things absolutely ridiculous, right? So this thing would come out. I mean, the reason why this Daily Show failed, because not only was it bad comedy, this version with this comedian. Trevor Noah, he just never said anything interesting.
Right.
It was just the same stuff. And what was the point? Just because I guess he's a great stand-up. He sells out arenas, so I imagine he's extraordinary, a handsome man, I might add. But Jon Stewart used to take shots. That's what made him such an effective commentator. And that's just it. John Oliver would have been a good substitute for him because John Oliver's way to the left. I get it, but he's very smart.
Yeah, he's super
smart. Right, super smart, and they got these great resources to get out great tape. So it was an interesting show. That's what got him on the cover. That's what got John Stewart on the cover of these magazines. because it's interesting takes and it would be a thought leader. But what he said about the lab.
When he was on with Stephen Colbert. That's another example. Do we have it?
What?
Do we have it?
If not, we'll have it on we'll have it when we have it on the break. But to me, there's another thing that I'm going to be doing on One Nation on Saturday. The Hill did a story on it, is that the non-relevance of the late night shows in this comedy cycle, in this political news cycle,
yeah.
Because nobody really knows. Listen, I'm not going to Stephen Colbert. I might as well just go to MSNBC.
Yeah.
It's not humorless.
Do you remember how Jimmy Fallon, remember when he had Trump on and messed up his hair and it was like a funny moment? And then he was excoriated. It was almost
for
like
normalizing him, and he had to apologize.
He apologized
for the sitting president.
I think that they were both running at the time, weren't they?
Okay.
I think it was Hillary, and obviously he had Hillary on, and then he had Trump.
If he had an ounce of guts, he would have said, "No, I'm going to do this. I want Democrats. I want Republicans to watch too."
I know.
If he had an ounce of guts, but maybe his company doesn't want him. What are you apologizing for?
I mean, it's crazy.
But it never got enough attention for that reason. But the other thing that I find I miss it is SNL. I wanted to hear what they were doing with Gore and Bush. I wanted to hear with Kerry and Bush.
Yeah.
I wanted to hear with Obama and Hillary. I wanted to hear with Obama and McCain. And that's when it really started switching. When they just did old jokes on McCain, I know David Letterman just would open up with, "How old is John McCain?" Bomb, 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 when he's been a fun guest. And I thought to myself, what's going on here?
Right.
He knows it's not funny. And he's doing it anyway on a comedy show, and now everything's gotten so much worse.
I know. It is sad. And now we're getting into this situation where there's comedy for conservatives and comedy for liberals, and then everything is so split. Like, there's the Babylon Bee, and then there's The Onion, and there's certain stand-up comedians that lean more to the right, and everybody else. And it's just like, do we really want a country that divided?
So, Alice, I don't know if I told you, but Pat O'Rourke says he's been doing stand-up. You know, he opens up all those shows with us, my friend since high school. And he's going to be there on December 2nd with you. He opens up and does a half hour. And he says, you know, he was reluctant to do a lot of Trump stuff in the beginning. He's not against. He just thinks what's happened to this country is not even, you know, it's ripe for comedy.
Yeah.
So it might come off as pro-Trump or not Democrat. And in the beginning, he was reluctant. He said, I all of a sudden open up with two or three jokes, and the laughs are so loud, and they ripple. It's almost as if people are letting it out now.
Right, yeah.
And he says, forget it. I throw caution to the wind. I don't even think about it.
That's great. So you went to college – you went to high school with a stand-up comedian?
Pat O'Rourke, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Afterwards, he started getting involved in it. He's really good. He knows we'll talk about it in the break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. Also by the fact that $6.3 million has been poured into New York and New Jersey. Why? By Democrats, because they are beginning to panic about losing congressional seats. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. We will not talk about Harry.
Brian Kilmeade's New York Times bestseller, The President and the Freedom Fighter, is now out in paperback and has a brand new afterword. Go pick it up today, wherever books are sold. More of Kilmeade coming up. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
That's not a real high money cost for a costume.
That is true. I'm going as Brian Kilmeade. Just going to walk
around
and cry.
Get some lifts in your shoes.
Put a lifts in and put a backpack on and cry.
Wow.
What is Greg Gutfeld, who's obsessed with me. Right? I mean, does he have...
I think he mentions you maybe two or three times every time I do.
Do you have other people, like in your life, do you have other people in a healthy way that are obsessed with you, that always keep mentioning you?
No.
I know no one that can really give me worthy advice of how to have this guy meet other people. To remove the target.
I think he should be flattered. He doesn't just do it to you, though. He does it to all of Fox and Friends, because I think he's more fascinated by...
getting up early.
Yeah, and like the fact that we're happy.
Right. It bothers him.
Well, he once said that he... did you know that once he filled in as an anchor on Fox and Friends, and he said it was the worst job he's ever had to take? I mean, he's the most talented person ever. You can't say anything bad about Greg, but it's just not... you know, everybody has their lane, and that's just like the opposite of anything he'd ever want to actually do.
Right.
Is wake up early and be like, you know, cute and fun.
By the way, have I ever cried that you know?
Not in front of me.
Right. So why would he even refer to that?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. All right. So as I mentioned before, I could not believe the generic poll, the congressional generic poll, is actually 4 points for the Democrats. I'd throw this out. When,
what poll, though?
It was the YouGov poll.
Oh, whatever.
That was in today. Okay, excuse me. And for now on, when you make a comment, I'm going to go, oh, whatever.
That wasn't directed at you. That was directed at YouGov. I don't know.
I mean, I can't believe that is indeed the case. So yesterday, you have a situation where a half a point separates Warnock and Walker. Out comes another woman with an accusation that he paid for an abortion. Here's Herschel Walker's answer to the accusation. Despite the fact that she was there answering questions and says that she has voicemail from him. Cut 24.
Well, that's a lie. And I've said that's a lie. And I hope people can see right now that Raphael Warnock and the left would do whatever they can to win this seat bite. But I don't think they realize that they messed with the wrong Georgian here, that I'm not going to stop. This seat is too important for me to stop thinking that they can try to scare me or force me out of this seat because that.
So what are your thoughts? It's a lie. She has voicemail, a press conference. Ainsley was saying this morning, he's like, I don't think people care anymore.
Yeah, I think there's been so much mudslinging in this particular race because there's also on the other side, you have that video footage of Raphael Warnock's ex-wife who they got into a huge fight and she's, I believe, speaking to a police officer. She's crying. She's saying all he cares about is power and he ran over my foot. And then there's some allegations with
Reverend Wright.
Yeah, the housing for low-income folks and all that stuff.
That the Ebenezer Church owns these buildings, right. And the minute they fall behind, they just throw these people out in the street.
So I think it's all salacious. I think that if you're a Republican, you're voting for, if you're a Democrat, you're voting for Raphael Warnock. If you're a Republican, you're voting for Herschel Walker. And I don't know. I do think that some independent voters could be swayed by these types of things. After the first abortion allegation came out, Herschel Walker's poll numbers did go down.
Right. And then they seem to be come back up after the debate. Carly, imagine if this is a runoff.
It's going to be.
And especially the balance of the Senate, if you don't get 50%, you got to run it off in December.
Yep.
Can you imagine how many people and how many speeches for Warnock and how many people are going to come out for Walker? It'll be insane. But it will not be ignored. I know that. Last time Republicans were told by the former president, stay in, it's all corrupt, and Republicans were fighting with Republicans, so Loeffler and Perdue lost.
Yes.
Don't you think they're all going to get into this?
Yeah, without a doubt, especially if it's 49-49, and that one seat is it. We could be talking about the midterm elections until 2023.
Thanks, Chloe.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, heard around the world. Big hour coming your way. Mark Thiessen, we're rounding him up. And Congressman Greg Stube, the great athlete from Florida, is going to be talking about a lot of, I don't know, DeSantis got about a 10-point lead, but there's a lot of focus on his race because they think he's a presidential candidate. And number two, Marco Rubio, a tough fight with Val Demings. She's got the, she's a, you know, her and her husband are big political heavyweights on the left, and she has the law enforcement background, but she was not strongly for law enforcement, and she's trying to rewrite her past. But Rubio's got about a 6-point lead there, and the president announced he's going to have a rally. He's also going to have a rally with J.D. Vance, I think, tonight. I did WHIO, did a hit with them this morning, and it looks like he's going to be rallying with J.D. Vance today. I hope the president gives him a plug without a hit. He's saying, well, this guy used to hate me. Now he likes me, but J.D. Vance, about a 2 or 3 point lead, that's estimated. But let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three. Sponsored by Crunch Fitness. Interested in owning your own business in a growing $30 billion industry? Check out Crunch Fitness at crunch.com.
Number three.
There's no doubt that Hunter Biden was part of a Chinese intelligence mission that was trying to gather as much information as possible about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the entire Biden family.
And that is the former Attorney General Matt Whitaker talking about what we now know. Hunter hijinks reaches new heights as a new intel reveals his assistant slash business partner was a Chinese spy and had access to the father who she was urging to run for president. We'll talk about it.
Number two.
The spending. Republicans are spending 80% of their money on offense, 20% on defense. The Democrats are the opposite. They're spending 20% of their money on offense and 80% on defense. Over time, that kind of funding difference is going to erode Democratic gains.
Midterm mania reaching new heights as debates, polls, and accusations fly. But could a red wave be stifled? A new congressional generic poll trending Democrats' way? I'm talking about a poll that needs to be looked at, but I don't know if what it's based on.
Number one.
We're making serious progress in getting prices close to what they were before the pandemic.
That is Joe Biden coming up with some interesting takes on the economy, which did grow at a respectable 2.6%. President Biden offers a fictional view of the economy in his America. What he said and what his numbers show as his blame game strategy reaches new heights, or dare I say, new lows. So what the president said yesterday, it's just crazy. For example, on the price of gas, cut one.
And by the way, the price of gasoline continues to fall. It's down for the third week in a row. They're down $1.25 a gallon from the beginning of the summer, and gas prices in the decade before the pandemic were averaging $3.30 before the pandemic, before I got here.
So it's $3.76, number one. It was going up over the last 2 weeks, dropped over the last 2 days by about a penny. He emptied the strategic oil reserve that's been warned that it's a folly move by Saudi Arabia and now Russia. And to get us, what, a dime less at the pump, making us, I don't know, it's, I think, half full at this point or 52% full at this point. When he took over February 17, 2020, gas was $2.51. But he just says stuff that's not based in any fact. Furniture is up 10%. Coffee's up 15%. Women's apparel, which I don't buy, but my wife sells, up 7.3%. Sports equipment up 6.5%. So this is roughly what's going on. Eggs up 30%. We know about the food. So the president's got to decide. Last week, kind of a dumb move, saying that abortion rights were first and foremost. He wants to codify Roe. Really? Okay. That was good in July, Mr. President. Who's advising you? Interesting take. That the reason why the abortion's not resonating right now in blue states is because women are smart and they know in blue states you don't have to worry about anything changing when it comes to abortion. When it comes to Lee Zeldin, well, he's pro-life. Excuse me. It might be pro-life, but like Marco Rubio mentioned as a Senate candidate, he as a governor candidate says these laws are on the books. You need legislation to pass it. He is pro-life, but the state isn't. So he will honor that. So people know that, which is why it's not resonating, and the economy is. So the president comes up with it. I know he didn't come up with it himself, but listen to what his focus was yesterday. Cut three.
One of the key things I've asked the council to take on was the unfair hidden fees known as junk fees that are taking real money out of your pockets, real money out of the pockets of American families. Things like, as been mentioned, surprise banking overdraft fees, excessive credit card late fees, hidden hotel booking fees, or those huge termination charges to stop you from switching cable and internet plans to a better deal.
Yeah, that's dancing on the edges. I mean, you could do that. Is that your big grandiose? You have Nancy Pelosi running the country around going, I'm tough on crime. And even though it's desperate and it's got no sincerity in it, she sincerely does know that they're getting killed because the number two issue or number one issue is crime in cities and suburbs. That really constitutes a lot of America. So now you're making enemies of industry again. So the American Hotel and Lodging Association responded to President Biden's claims that hotels are jamming in fees. Says hotels strive to create memorable experiences for all guests every day. That means delivering amenities and services that meet our guests' expectations and evolving tastes, offering real, tangible value, and ensuring that booking transactions are transparent. The Hotel Association most recent data shows that 93% of hotels do not change resort fees. Also, as I welcome in Mark Thiessen, Mark, check this out from the Washington Post, Fox News contributor. Check this out. President Biden says, well, I should let you hear it. Here's what he said about airlines and resorts. Cut four.
Last week, the Federal Trade Commission started work on a rule to crack down on unfair and deceptive fees across all industries. Fees that were never disclosed. And there was no way to avoid the fee, like processing fees for concert tickets or like resort fees. When you think you're paying one price to book a hotel, you only find out after you're checking out that there's a resort fee you've never heard about that's added to your bill.
Right. Thanks, Mr. President. He goes on to say when it comes to airlines, he says if you want 6 inches extra room, they charge you for it. No, you're paying for more room. It's called extra leg room if it's JetBlue. He wants to get rid of it. He says it's really unfair to, drum roll please, people of color. So now if you ask for more leg room and get charged for it, it's unfair to people of color. Where did these junk fees make the priority list? What do you think about that, Mark?
I don't understand why he's focused on this when we've got the worst inflation in four decades, the worst collapse in real wages. I mean, if in 40 years, if people's wages were going up and people didn't have a problem, they wouldn't have a problem paying an extra $25 for extra legroom. Like, why is this seriously, like 14 days before a red tsunami hits, he's talking about legroom fees?
How about this? Do you have to bring race into everything?
Legroom. I've been on Air Force One. There's plenty of legroom there, but good Lord.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And are they trying to say that people of color are heavy? They need more room and they gain charge for it? I don't even know. But people just had a field day with this. And here's the Daily Wire. Frank Fleming says things are looking really bad for Democrats, but will message on airline charging extra fees for more legroom hurts minorities. Will that turn things around for them? I don't think so. And when you see Nancy Pelosi traipsing the country, desperate to let everybody know that she's tough on crime, that shows desperation. What about $6.3 million put into congressional races in New York and New Jersey because they're panicking? Put it in perspective, Mark.
I mean, they're flailing. First Joe Biden goes out and he tells us the economy is strong as hell, to which most Americans say, what the hell are you talking about? then he's, talking about legroom fees and I guess systemic racism and legroom is the new Democratic talking point. And now he's running around saying, like, well, Republicans will make things worse. It's like, I mean, could it get worse? Is it the bar is pretty low for that? I mean, we're just in a mess. The Democrats know that this is coming. They know they can't stop it, and they're just flailing.
So we saw Lee Zeldin do fine in a debate. It clearly won. Governor Hochul's comment, "Well, why are you so obsessed with penalties for criminals?" I think is going to ring in infamy, but. That will be the story of this election, because I've said that when he was allegedly down 24 points, he seems to have the makeup at the right time in the right place against the right opponent to make a real run at this. I believe it's 50-50. Mark, from 30,000 feet, you're outside New York. I'm in the middle of it. What do you think?
Well, I'm a New Yorker. I grew up in New York City. I remember when the last time we had a crime wave like this was in the 1990s, and New Yorkers turned to Rudy Giuliani, who was a great Republican mayor, to clean it up. You would think that. I mean, even when they elected Eric Adams, the reason they elected him is because he promised to crack down on crime, and he hasn't done it. Maybe they're frustrated enough at this point to turn to a Republican. It's really hard. New York is very different. The electorate is very different than it was in the 1990s. But if they really want to fix this problem, you can't do it by turning to a Democrat who pretends to be tough on crime like Eric Adams does. You have to elect a Republican who's really going to do it, and Zeldin is that, exactly that. So
here's 20.
Maybe it'll happen.
This is the moment that I think works for Lee Zeldin. Cut 28.
The first day that I'm in office, I'm going to declare a crime emergency and suspend Castle's bail and these other pro-criminal laws because there is a crime emergency. My opponent thinks that right now there's a polio emergency going on, but there's not a crime emergency. different priorities that I'm hearing from people right now. They're not being represented from this governor, who still, to this moment, we're halfway through the debate, she still hasn't talked about locking up anyone committing any crimes.
Anyone who commits a crime under our laws, especially with the change they made to bail, has consequences. I don't know why that's so important to you. All I know is that we could do more.
I don't know why that's so important to you.
Yeah, that's devastating. And here's the thing that we have learned, and why this is probably affecting this race in a way that it wouldn't otherwise. It used to be that crime was sort of ghettoized, right? There were dangerous neighborhoods where crime was affected, but most, you know, middle class New Yorkers could go about their lives and basically not be affected by the crime in their midst. It's not happening anymore. The fact that there was a drive-by shooting outside Zeldin's home, which is a leafy suburb in Long Island that doesn't have a high crime rate, you know, it shows that it's spreading everywhere and everyone feels endangered. I mean, I think there was a poll, the New York Post had a poll that over 70% of New Yorkers personally are afraid that they're going to be the victim of violent crime. So I think it's the crime is not only that the murder, there are more murders in America last year than there have been since 1994. It's not that the murders are higher, the violence is higher, the subways are unsafe. It's that it's spreading everywhere. That it's not contained to certain high crime areas. It's everywhere, and I think New Yorkers feel unsafe. And when people feel unsafe, they turn to Republicans, even if they don't like them on other issues.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. The other big story is Fetterman. What he did the other night when he opened up and said hello, good night, everybody. I said this is going to be a long night for him. It got even worse. Yeah. And the fact is that people are saying their takeaway is, who let him debate? My question is, who let him run? Who would allow him to run, get the nomination, and hold? What Democrat would say it's in the best interest of the country and the party to allow him out there? Here's a little bit about the most consequential statement, which is a flat-out lie on fracking. Cut 7.
I absolutely support fracking.
You have made two conflicting statements regarding fracking. In a 2018 interview, you said, quote, I don't support fracking at all. I never have. But earlier this month, you told an interviewer, quote, I support fracking.
I do support fracking. And I support fracking and I stand and I do support fracking.
I mean, we're going to elect this guy. Number one, he's lying.
Yeah, so,
number two, he never did. And he probably will and never will.
So here's the problem. So if John Fetterman was elected, he would not be the most cognitively impaired senator ever to serve in the United States Senate. And he clearly has trouble hearing and processing information. He clearly has trouble speaking. The problem is that most voters who are being asked to vote for somebody who's had a stroke want to be assured that those are just speech and word processing issues, and not that he's really truly cognitively impaired in the sense that he can't understand the issues, can't function, right? And the fact that he won't release his medical records or allow reporters to talk to his doctor, who would go on record and say that John Fetterman has no cognitive impairment other than speech and word and processing issues. That's what's so devastating. It's not just that he has a disability, because lots of people with disabilities have served in office. It's that he has not been transparent about his health. And so people look at those quotes and they have to assume that represents his cognitive ability, not just a motor processing issue. So it's the fact that he's not been transparent, that he's covered up he hasn't released his medical records.
Yeah.
He won't let anyone interview his doctor and ask tough questions. People are not going to take a risk that he's not capable of doing the job.
Let alone reveal that he's got a left-wing Bernie Sanders-like series of philosophies on issues that matter most, changing them without acknowledging that they're changing. He didn't say, you know, I've come to light on this. I've talked to people in Pennsylvania. Yeah. I've changed my mind on this. It just said, no, I never said that. What do you mean you never said that? So it's maddening. Yeah. Mark, thanks so much. Always great to talk to you.
All right.
1-866, you got it. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, we'll be able to open up the phones and expand on this. Other Senate races, they just moved a key race in Arizona to now toss up. It's devastating for Democrats. Don't move.
Hi. Good night, everybody.
Challenging conventional thought and wisdom. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
a talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Who doesn't love a yellow school bus, right? Can you raise your hand if you love a yellow school bus, right? Just, there's something about the, and most of us, many of us went to school on the yellow school bus, right? And it's part of our experience growing up. The excitement and joy of going to school, to be with your favorite teacher, to be with your best friends, and to learn. The school bus takes us there. Yellow school bus, right?
Right. What is wrong with her? What an embarrassment. So many people wrote me and said, yeah, my yellow school bus, that's where I got beat up. That's where I got bullied. Alex, listen on WABC. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Was that Kamala Harris? She sounded just insane. Her voice was also different than regularly. But I called about your fantastic interview with Donald Trump that you had on Friday. But I first wanted to say at the beginning of this hour, you mentioned that eggs are up 30%. I don't know where you bought your eggs, but 2 years ago, I would buy in the same store I buy today's days for eggs, one dozen for $105. 2 weeks ago, I bought five dozen eggs. It was $25. That means it's $5 a dozen eggs.
Nuts.
So it's absolutely crazy. But about your interview with Donald Trump, you asked him if this election is going to affect whether he runs in 2024. And I think he's going to run regardless of whatever happens. But the question is, are we going to allow him to run in 2024? Because if we lose this election now, this midterm, it's all because of President Trump.
We'll see. A lot of these candidates have ended up much better than anyone thought, including Blake Masters.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We're making serious progress in getting prices close to what they were before the pandemic. The most common price right now in America is $3.39 a gallon. It's going to come down more. And they're going to come down even further when gas companies, when the oil companies agree to our demand, my demand, to pass on the savings from the price of a barrel of oil, which is considerably down, to the pump.
He's trying to vilify those who actually are making a profit in this country and without even knowing anything about the business, because a barrel of oil is a certain price and the gas at the pump is not going down as quick as you want it to. It doesn't mean someone is trying to collect profits, or it doesn't mean someone is gouging. He keeps saying the same thing over and over again while not listening to the response. It drives me nuts. Joining us now is Congressman Greg Stube of Florida. Congressman, he continues to always try to find somebody to blame. Have you noticed that? Saudi Arabia, they're the blame. We're going to reevaluate that relationship. The Putin price hike, he's the cause of all this. Now it's the gas companies. That's what's causing the pain for Americans, not him.
Yeah, and it's been like that his entire administration, because he can't take responsibility for the actions that they are directly doing, from gas prices to inflation, you name it. They are actions that this administration has taken with their war on domestic production of oil and gas, which are causing the prices where they are. They're almost double what they were when Trump left office, all because of the decisions that they're made. For the first year that Biden was in office, they just blamed Trump for everything. It was all Trump. They blamed them for everything that was happening, and now they got a shift of blame, because they can't be blaming Trump 2 years after he's left office, to Putin, to the Russians, to the Saudis, to everybody else except where it squarely lies. Today, as he sits in the White House, he could, with the stroke of a pen, reverse the over 100 executive actions his administration has taken on the war on domestic production of oil and gas, and you would see relief to consumers at the pump.
He's not doing it. So far in these debates, we're finding some things going on. I don't know if you're following it, but so many New Yorkers have gone to Florida. They might be telling you the story. What's happened with Lee Zeldin in New York? What does it tell you that we're in a virtual flat-footed tie in a state that is 3-1 Democrats to Republicans?
Well, one, it shows you how disastrous the Democrats' policies have been on our country, and that people are finally waking up. Even Democrats are waking up. And I do see it. I see it every single day here in Florida. I was in Charlotte County last night. Everywhere I go in my district, I can't tell you how many people will come up to me and say, hey, I moved here from New York. I moved here from California. I had three people come up to me that said they just recently moved here from LA, and that the news, it pales in comparison to what's actually happening on the ground in LA and in California. And it was so bad that they moved to Florida. Our district is booming. The state is booming because they know there's freedom in Florida. They know that there's going to be law and order in Florida. And that's what Americans want. And so at some point, they say enough is enough. And I'm going to leave where I've grown up or where I've lived or built my business to come to a place where they know it's safe and secure, where they know that they're going to have freedom and not have mandates. And they know they're going to be able to live the American dream in a state like Florida that they can't live in places like New York City.
Yeah, well, yeah, they just can't. Overall, there seems to be a trend in this country right now away from Democrats, and that is why they've changed their stance when it comes to crime and punishment in particular. They still haven't taken a real interest in the border and claiming that they never look to defund the cops. And then there's this thing called debates, and it's just flat out earned respect that people like Tudor Dixon, Zeldin, and others are getting. And Fetterman is losing. Here's Kellyanne Conway, Cut 19.
I see the Democrats right now because Hochul was so terrible last night against Zeldin. Whitmer was so terrible against Tudor Dixon. Obviously, John Fetterman was the worst against Oz. They're now going to tell us debates aren't even important because they need to run Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in debates next time. So watch for that, everybody. It's not just that this wasn't a good format for John Fetterman, that why are we even doing debates? They're not important. Yes, they are. They are central to democracy.
So that is true. And Tudor Dixon, Blake Masters are in the middle of a surge. Even Dom Bolduc, even though he's getting almost no support from the Republican Party, he's within 5 points of Senator Hassan. Can you compare this to any other time in your career?
Not in my lifetime, not in the time that I've been in politics. And I've been in politics for 12 years, serving the State House and State Senate before Congress. And it's because of all the disastrous policies that a democratically run entire government, they have the House, the Senate, and the White House, have put on the American people, and the American people are finally fed up. And it's that moderate woman, it's that independent voter that drives these general elections, and it shows you that they're going towards Republicans. If you look at the polling and you read through the actual overall numbers and you see what people care the most about, it's inflation, it's immigration, it's border security, it's the things that we have been talking about. Then if you look deeper, who do they trust for on those issues, crime, immigration, border security? They trust Republicans by like 20 points. So those people know that that's affecting their everyday lives, and they're going to elect candidates that they know are going to change that, and they trust Republicans overwhelmingly compared to Democrats on those issues they care about.
And so far, it seems that. Here's the president, though. He thinks he's got the sweet spot. Cut three.
One of the key things I've asked the council to take on was the unfair hidden fees known as junk fees that are taking real money out of your pockets, real money out of the pockets of American families. Things like, as been mentioned, surprise banking overdraft fees, excessive credit card late fees, hidden hotel booking fees, or those huge termination charges to stop you from switching cable and internet plans to a better deal.
So he says it's hidden fees he's going to crack down on. The hotel business immediately put a press release out saying we don't have any hidden fees. 93% of the people say that everything that they thought they got, they were going to get, and just explain themselves. He vilifies these areas, and they got to defend themselves. Oil and gas can't get out the statements quick enough because he keeps acting like they're the bad guys. And now he's got it with these hidden fees with banks and hotels. And get this, airlines, who basically are racist if they charge you for extra legroom.
Yeah, it's insane that we're going to constantly, that the Biden administration constantly is going to blame corporations and businesses and the people that make America run, the people that actually employ America. And that's not the problem. The problem is the trillions of dollars that this Democratic majority has dumped on the economy that has caused the inflationary effect that we have, the war on domestic production of energy that the Biden administration has had, which has added to that inflationary cost because everything has to get on a diesel truck to get to where you're purchasing it. That's what's affecting the lives of everyday people. And inflation alone, do away with all these so-called hidden fees. That's nowhere compared to what a family of four, I think the number I saw was $6,000 additional a year that inflation has laid on them because of the policies of the White House and the Biden administration. There's no way that people can recover from that with so-called hidden fees that corporate America is putting on people. It's just not the case, but they have to point the finger somewhere else. other than their policies.
So what is the IRS is about to get 87,000 more agents. That's not stopping them from rejecting loan applications for thousands. What's going on here?
We have people in my district who are filing FEMA claims and SBA claims. But because the IRS has been so backed up for so many years, because for 2 years, they didn't even show up for work. They didn't even come into the office because of COVID. They're still using COVID as a reason why all of these returns are delayed. We have millions of Americans whose returns have not been returned all the way back to 2021. So now when my constituents go to file a FEMA claim or go to file an SBA claim because their house has been destroyed by Hurricane Ian, they're being rejected because the IRS hasn't done their return yet. It's not to any fault of their own. They haven't done anything illegal or inappropriate. They haven't filed. It's not that they haven't filed their taxes. The IRS just hasn't gotten around to doing their taxes. And so now they're being penalized because they're filing for FEMA and SBA assistance, and they're getting denied because the IRS isn't doing their job.
So that's why we need 87,000 more agents?
No, the 87,000, and that's an interesting point. You would think that they would take those 87,000 new agents and actually push them towards the backlog, but only $3.2 billion of the $80 billion that was earmarked for the IRS is actually going towards taxpayer services. Everything else is going to enforcement. So 95% of the $80 billion to hire 87,000 more IRS workers, it isn't to help the American people to deal with the backlog. It's to go after the American people and small businesses and conservatives with a political ideology for enforcement proceedings. It has nothing to do with helping everyday Americans to ensure that they do their job and get their returns completed on time.
Interesting. We're talking with Congressman Greg Stube. Congressman, you have that military background. You in the Airborne Infantry Officer, a JAG Corps officer from 2004 to 2008. And we see right now the Republicans seem to be questioning a little bit of their support to a degree. Over 50 voted against the latest aid package to Ukraine and a handful of senators. Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin stated that Ukraine has lost its sovereignty, reestablished that in the 26th. He's looking to take the whole country, too. And Russia, as the occupation, this is the good news for Ukrainians, of Kherson is about to end as they're being pushed back gradually. Do you believe it's in America's best interest to support Ukraine?
We have, I mean, the first aid package was $45 billion. The overwhelming majority of Congress supported them. But at some point, you have to say, when are we going to have oversight on the money that's being spent? I voted for the first package, but I voted against all the rest of the packages because the administration has refused to provide us information as to how it's being spent. There's no guardrails on it. And quite frankly, I support the America First agenda. And I think we have our own issues right here at home on the border, right here in my district, where people are homes have been destroyed and are trying to make FEMA claims and SBA loans to get their lives back together. And that's where the focus of the American taxpayer dollars should be.
Well,
we've spent $65 billion in Ukraine, which is more than any other country in the world and more than we've given anybody else in the last 20 years, including Afghanistan.
A couple of things to follow through. How could they reject you? That makes no sense. That's not constitutional. The Pentagon says, I'm not telling you where the money is, where the weapons are going.
I've had classified briefings and without, you know, obviously disclosing the details of that, where we have not been provided answers to the questions that I just asked.
See, I think follow through works against their interests. If you're not going to tell people where it's going, they're going to say, I'm out.
And if we don't have oversight, you're not providing us that information.
Will that change if you guys are in the majority?
Yeah, because now we have subpoena power, we have the gavel power,
gotcha,
and we can do those classified briefings, but subpoena the information and get the information. If we don't get the answers, put it before the American people.
See, I think as foreign policy, I believe you can enforce your border and you can have a foreign policy. And I think that destroying the Russian, watching the Russian army be destroyed is in our best interest, and reining them in is America First, don't you think?
We need to have accountability for the money that we're spending over there, and that's important to taxpayers, certainly in my district and to this country, to ensure that the money that we are spending and that they say are going to help Ukrainians and going to weapons. And I asked this question, and I didn't get a response.
What happened to all – so Blinken recently made public the whole list of weapons and ammunitions and Stingers and artillery and all that that we gave to the Ukrainians. They couldn't even answer for me where that is at. Has it been used? Have you depleted our own military assets to give military assets to Ukraine? All of those answers need to be answered because we need to ensure that we can protect the safety and sovereignty of our country first.
Right. And if those things are answered, you might change your view on the need to support Ukraine. If you see that they're going right to the people on the front lines, and if we force our allies to do the same because they seem to be falling way short in their support.
Oh, that's another thing to this whole mess is the Europeans, the people that are closest to this war in Eastern Europe need to start coming up with the resources. Nowhere they have spent nowhere near what America has spent, $65 billion to Ukraine, which is way more than any other country. And the other European allies and NATO allies need to start stepping up if America is going to take a larger role in this.
I do. I agree with that. But I definitely see a need to stop Russia. They take Georgia. They take Crimea. They're going to move in on the Baltics. It's going to be a much bigger problem in years to come. And you as a military guy, I think that if you're in, if you go to the Pentagon in the majority and you and they start giving you a hard time about the fulfillment of where this stuff is going, I mean, that's going to undermine their own. That's going to undermine the whole operation. And I remember the same thing with the Iraq war. But I felt like Bush was being more responsible and saying exactly where the war was going and the arms were going.
Give us answers and give Congress the oversight ability that Congress has. The Democrats aren't going to do that. And that's why it's so important that we take the majority back. Just not just for that reason and oversight on defense spending, but all the other things that we've talked about that we can rein in a completely out of control White House and progressive agenda.
Congressman Greg Stube, who's in Florida, which is increasingly turning red, almost like Ohio has become gradually. It's happening really because of the effectiveness of political leadership, a governor and senators there, as well as what's happening in Ohio. We'll see if it stays that way. Congressman, always great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
1-866-408-7669. I see you up there. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Just quick announcement. The president of Freedom Fighter is back on, back out. But this time in a paperback version. I've added in the epilogue all the things that's happened since the book came out in terms of taking down the Freedom Statue in Washington. It stayed. They took the one down in Massachusetts and Frederick Douglass statue ripped out of the ground during the George Floyd riots and what it means to look at a war on history and how to win it. But go to BrianKilmeade.com if you want it personalized. Also, tonight, I'm going to be in Bayshore, Long Island at Barnes & Noble. WABC listeners, RCN, I'll be at Barnes & Noble. And I look forward to seeing you in person. Get there. I'll be able to talk first around 7 o'clock. And then I'll get to all your books and be able to personalize them for the holidays or whatever you have coming up. And then on Saturday, I'll be in Rochester, New York. First time ever. Barnes & Noble. I'll be there in the afternoon. Just go to BrianKilmeade.com. You have all the details and make your reservations. And don't forget, live shows. Talk about all the book, War on History, winning it. In Brandon, Mississippi, on November 12th, November 13th, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. KRMG listeners, I hope to see you all out there. Go get tickets. And then December 2nd in Newark, New Jersey, the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, full of Fox surprises. Gerard, listen on WSKY. Hey, Gerard.
Hey, good morning, Brian. It's great to talk with you. I wanted to talk about the John Fetterman and the whole debate thing. When someone campaigns for office, it's a job interview. It's a vetting process to the American public. And the fact that he didn't want to really have a debate or had one late in the game just shows they're trying to hide from the issues. I think that Fetterman, voluntarily, he's got enough cognitive ability that he understands that he's running for Senate, okay? He understands the office that he's trying to aspire to. That means that everything is on the table, his cognitive abilities, his past policy positions, his past performance. And I think that the right should stop being apologetic about trying to say, well, everybody's empathetic to an individual that has had a stroke. Of course, we all are and wish him a full recovery. But that doesn't mean that he's aspiring to a position in the Senate, the world's greatest deliberative body.
I hear you. I know. I 100% agree. I thought that before the debate. the answer isn't, why did he debate? No, it's like, why is he still running? And also, if I want to expand on what I said before, for the Brian Kilmeade tour, just go to BrianKilmeade.com, click on book tour. I'm probably going to be in the city right near you.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We got a busy hour coming your way. Democratic former Nassau County Executive Laura Kern will be with us. Talk about the state of her party that she predicted about a year ago was going to have a huge wake-up call in the midterms and match Schlapp as powerful a voice on the Republican conservative sides as anyone as he runs CPAC. He'll be with us in a matter of moments. And we're just watching the President of the United States. No press involved, but he goes to a junior college in Syracuse, New York to announce manufacturing coming back, chips being moved, and a major company coming to upstate New York, but not New York City. AOC made sure we don't want to have any tax breaks for any companies opening up and possibly having jobs. So that goes to Syracuse. I'm happy for Syracuse. Bringing chips home is always a good move, but at what cost is the other thing? And have you ever seen a president of the United States have less press access? You know where he's going after his event in Syracuse? Delaware. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
There's no doubt that Hunter Biden was part of a Chinese intelligence mission that was trying to gather as much information as possible about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the entire Biden family.
That is Matt Whitaker, former attorney general, acting. Hunter hijinks reaches new heights as new intel reveals his assistant, a Chinese spy, was a Chinese spy, urged him, by the way, to get his father to run for president. You concerned about that? You should be.
Number two.
The spending. Republicans are spending 80% of their money on offense, 20% on defense. The Democrats are the opposite. They're spending 20% of their money on offense and 80% on defense. Over time, that kind of funding difference is going to erode Democratic gains.
And that's what's happening. Midterm mania reaching new heights in debates, polls, and accusations. We'll discuss.
Number one.
We're making serious progress in getting prices close to what they were before the pandemic.
We'll see. President Biden offers a fictional view of the economy in his America. What he said and what the numbers show as the blame game strategy reaches new heights. I mean, new lows. Matt Schlapp, welcome back. How are you feeling less than 2 weeks into the midterm elections? Matt Schlapp, chairman of CPAC. Host of CPAC and former political director for President George W. Bush. Are you there? Okay. We'll try to get him back online. So here's what the president said. I'm kind of astounded. So when prices go up, he blamed Vladimir Putin. When 2 million barrels of oil are taken off OPEC Plus out of production, now he blames Saudi Arabia, said they'll be punished. When we have inflation, he says blame the pandemic. That's the president's attitude. That's his approach. And I'm not really sure why. What experts is telling him this is a good move. Here he is yesterday. Cut one.
And by the way, the price of gasoline continues to fall. It's down for the third week in a row. They're down $1.25 a gallon from the beginning of the summer. And gas prices in the decade before the pandemic were averaging $3.30 before the pandemic, before I got here.
It was $2.51 a gallon. It is now $3.76 a gallon. That is substantially up. You just empty the strategic oil reserves. It's just over 50% full. To get maybe a dime off the top, it makes no sense. If you want any type of foodstuffs like eggs, pay 30% more. Furniture and bedding, 10%. Coffee, 15%. And it goes down from there, from sports equipment to women's apparel. Another, everybody's paying more for everything, and including gas and oil. Instead of the president saying, maybe stuff I did or here's what I'm going to attack it, he's not doing that. He's blaming other people, and he's saying things are better than they are. Look, it looks like the economy grew at 2.4%, slightly better than anyone thought. But that is not making people feel better because the first time in many of their lifetimes, their dollar is worth less. Their paycheck is not going as far. And here is Matt Schlapp to join us now. Matt, the president of the United States is blaming Saudi Arabia. We know he's been blaming Republicans. We also know he's been blaming Vladimir Putin for what's going on right now. And now he's also blaming the oil and gas companies. He says, I want the number at the pump to reflect the number of the barrel, the cost decreasing at the by the barrel to be reflected at the pump. Your thoughts on this strategy?
Well, he's also blaming airline companies for being racist by not giving people enough legroom. Look, the fact is Joe Biden's grasping at anything he can, including name-calling to people who disagree with him politically, semi-fascists, et cetera. And the scary thing is, Brian, is the Democrats have this wrong. They keep saying, well, the reason why we have high inflation is a global phenomenon. What they don't get is America drives the global economy, and America made a lot of mistakes. We superjuiced our economy. You know, we were in this pandemic, but Biden used it to pass trillions of dollars of emergency spending. And at the same time, he started sending the message that he was going to cancel every fossil fuel project. He said, we're going to get off fossil fuels. That sent a message to everybody running a fossil fuel company. Got to diversify. You got to get out of fossil fuels. And what happened with that? Prices started to skyrocket. You know, on the first day, he canceled the Keystone XL pipeline extension, canceled it. And now he's running around trying to beg Venezuela and Iran and the Saudi prince for oil. It makes America look weak and defensive. And, you know, Joe Biden has no answers for the economic woes that the American people are going through. Matter of fact, they've all figured it out. The Biden policies are making it worse.
It does seem to be that way. So the one thing that's pretty clear is that he always finds somebody to vilify. The oil and gas companies that you mentioned, also the hotel industry. He says there's too many hidden fees and people are being surprised about how much they're paying. You spent a lot of time on the road. I thought it was an interesting thing to go after the hotel industry, who's been basically put on a respirator over the last 2 years as everyone stopped traveling. Now, if he wants to go for junk fees, he wants to go after that. They are pushing back the whole industry. It says 93% of the people say the hotels do not charge resort. They say, number one, 93% of the people are satisfied with the bill they have. When it comes to resort fees, as they apply for, they're clearly and prominently displayed by hotel websites prior to the end of the booking process in accordance with the guidance issued by the Trade Commission, or else they're going to get screwed and fined. So why is he taking aim at industries all the time?
Dear oil and gas companies, dear hotel companies, dear airlines, dear all big companies, you all went woke. You all said that voter ID was racist. You all want to pay for 9 months of abortion for your employees. You signed on to Black Lives Matter and defunding cops, and now we have disaster in our society. And the Democrats hate you, and the Republicans used to defend you, and the conservatives were your action troops. And you've gone against us, and you're going to have a very, 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 very bad time in Washington come January, because we're going to have these Republican majorities who no longer like corporate America because they called us all racist, and the Democrats want to nationalize them. They're in a bad spot. They better change. They better get back to neutral, because actually it's the red America that says airlines should charge what they want. They should charge the fees that they need to, and oil and gas companies should drill, baby, drill, and get those prices lower. We're your allies. Quit fighting us.
Here is so the biggest story is the Republicans were in fear of having that seat, Pat Toomey's seat, flipped in Pennsylvania. And then we're watching John Fetterman refuse to campaign, refuse to talk, refuse to do interviews, finally agrees to a debate. And it was an absolute disaster because he clearly is failing since his stroke. And his policies he's reversing that are so unpopular, from fracking on down. Here's Fetterman trying to explain his way out of it in Pittsburgh with Dave Matthews. He's going to be joined on the stump by the president and former President Obama. Listen to him yesterday, cut nine.
Not only are we still standing, we are still winning. I'm still up in the polls. I'm running to serve Pennsylvania. He's running to use Pennsylvania. And here's the right also about that debate. I may not get every word the right way, but I will always do the right thing in Washington, D.C.
Feel better?
I was just in Pennsylvania. I've been talking to Dr. Oz every little bit while he's on the campaign trail. Met his really dynamic son who's in medical school. It's a nice family. Dr. Oz is going to win that race. And why do I say that so confidently? The American people are sick and tired of this war on America, and Pennsylvanians love their country. They believe cops are important. They think parents should raise kids. And they don't like all this animosity and this anti-Americanism that the Democrats have brought in. Fetterman it's about the weirdest candidate I've ever seen try to win statewide. And what happens in a big red wave, what happens in a big red wave, Brian, people don't get this, is that the close ones go red. And Oz has brought this thing to a tie. He's going to win that race.
But you know what? It's never too late to blame Dr. Oz for something, even though he never brought up the stroke and never mocked him on the closed captioning, which this guy, Fetterman, only practiced once. He could have been practicing all day to get it down to be smoother. And twice Dr. Oz practiced with it. I don't think he needs any practice, nor did he need closed captioning. Here's what this CNN doctor, Jonathan Reiner, said on CNN, I should add. Cut 12.
I take care of people like Mr. Fetterman who have had atrial fibrillation, which is where we think his stroke came from, where how it originated. And I admire his courage to go on that debate last night. He had to know that he was facing basically a fast-talking TV doctor who at times seemed to be talking almost intentionally faster in the face of Mr. Fetterman's difficulty speaking. Almost, sometimes it appeared almost cruelly faster. He had to know that he would get the kind of reception that he got from that.
Cruelly faster. How dare Dr. Oz talk cruelly fast? I never heard that before.
I mean, it's just that the covering that's being done on TV for Fetterman, I know we all say this as, you know, at least my side as Republicans, you know, if a Republican was trying to run for the United States Senate, clearly debilitated, everybody would take him on. You watch this. If Donald Trump runs for the presidency, I think he will, they'll all talk about, oh, my God, he's too old. They never talk about Joe Biden being too old. They say Joe Biden is, you know, trying to unify us. And look, I just think the American people have figured this out, Brian. You know, they don't hate the Democratic Party. They understand that there's two major parties. But in the end, the Democratic Party turned full woke, full left, full anti-American. And I don't think that means the voters are in love with the Republican Party. We're just more practical. We try to do things that work. We try to do things that make sense. And when people go on MSNBC and CNN and try to say that a stroke victim running for Senate is actually not a stroke victim running for Senate, but like this crusading, courageous person who's wonderful, it doesn't make any sense. Matter of fact, I don't know if Fetterman has like ever even accomplished anything in his life. When you look at his bio, he's a rich kid who wears a hoodie. And if that's what they want in the Senate, go for it. But I don't think that's what Pennsylvania wants.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Well, I'm fascinated. I've been following the New York race, and most people on the outside said, why does it matter? Lee Zeldin doesn't have a shot. 24 down, 12 down, 10 down, 8 down, 6 down. And then on Sunday, he was within a point and then up half a point. And then they had the debate on Tuesday. What did you think of what you saw the debate? And do you think that Lee Zeldin actually is in a dead heat? Like, what does Matt Schlapp of CPAC think?
Everybody I know besides like Brian Kilmeade, who thinks normally, got the hell out of New York. It seemed like so many people moved. So I told Lee, I'm like, Lee, what are you doing? All the Republicans I know moved. And he was like, no, Matt, we got a shot. You got to believe. So I'm a believer. I think Lee Zeldin pulls this out. Why? A lot of reasons. But, you know, in New York, you know, my parents are New Yorkers. I grew up outside of New York for 4 years. And in the 70s, it was a dangerous place to go. And everyone who remembers that time now thinks we're right back there again. And by the way, it took decades to get out of that. New York's be in a bad spot, and Lee Zeldin's going to pull this off. And by the way, she says, why do you care about crime?
She said that. That's one of her statements that'll live in infamy. So The View took on this topic in New York City, as left as it gets. Alyssa Farah Griffin, who's become a big critic of Donald Trump and used to work for Donald Trump. But listen to her here with Sonny Hostin, as well as Joy Behar. You'll recognize the voices. Cut 31.
I think the plan is fear-mongering. I really do.
No, this is a response to Democrats saying defund the police.
New York is one of the safest cities in the country. It has a $5
billion
budget. Do you feel
that, though? I don't feel safe in New York.
It has a $5 budget for the police.
I live in the city.
It's not about
the
police.
You're very young. You are. You're 32 years old, was it? You know, I've been around, and there were worse crime rates in the 80s and the
70s. I agree, but we shouldn't settle.
I was afraid to leave my house at some point.
But we shouldn't settle for that.
You're too young to comment on crime. Yeah, to comment on sucker punches. Now that we have so many cameras, people being shoved in front of subways, maybe Lee Zeldin, shots fired across through his house, not through his house, but by his house, being attacked on a platform. But you're too young. New York is fine.
Yeah, and Brett Kavanaugh having a man abducted right outside his house where his daughters are.
Yeah.
You know, this and where are the Democrats calling out the violence? They never called out the violence of Black Lives Matter until much later, and it was pretty sheepish. Kamala Harris tried to get those people back out on the streets the next day. This embrace of violence is wrong, and this idea that somehow the Republicans are fomenting violence out there is terribly wrong. It's the Democratic Party that is normalizing this idea. Let me just tell you, as you know, the FBI has delayed putting out a lot of the state-based data on violent crimes because it would hurt the Democrats. It's part of the politicization of the FBI and DOJ. If we all knew the real crime rates, they would be shockingly high. And why do we know that? I walk the streets of these cities. You walk the streets of these cities. The drugs,
every day,
the homelessness, the fact that cops feel like they can't do their job anymore without getting sued or fired. It's having a devastating impact. And by the way, Brian, who are the victims? It's not a bunch of white people. It's a lot of people of color. And that's why Hispanics and people of color are going to be voting Republican in historic numbers. They know that, like, their kids are born boys and girls. They want their girls to compete in sports. They think parents matter. They fled socialism. They know it doesn't work. And they want to be safe.
Yeah, I think that is it. And Governor Hochul saying the numbers say we should be fine. But if you don't feel that way, that's really on you. Now they're trying to crack down on crime. Nancy Pelosi's doing it. Lastly, $6.3 million has been spent in New York, New Jersey on congressional races by Democrats. And that shows panic in those blue states. Matt, it's an exciting time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. Great to be with you.
And you can follow him at M. Schlapp. When we come back, your calls. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hi. Good night, everybody.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You know, the campaign was opaque. At the very beginning, they didn't really disclose the degree of his illness. We don't really know how sick he was. In fact, his treating physicians were never made available to the press or the public. So we don't really know how much Mr. Fetterman has actually recovered.
In fact, at the debate, he was asked if he would release his medical records, and he basically said no.
So, you know, he might have had a massive event. And if, you know, people who had seen him originally might now say, oh, my God, he looks remarkably better. And I bet he does. But not knowing how far he's come, it's very difficult to know how far he can go. It would be good for the people who care for him to be made available to the press. There is no sin in having a stroke. There's a lot of honor in the dogged determination that it takes to recover, and I admire that. What I don't admire is the way sort of the campaign has handled the disclosure of his illness.
You think they should have been more upfront and transparent about it?
Absolutely.
Of course. It's disrespectful. Mike, listen on the Fox News Radio app in Glendora, California. Mike.
Brian, good night. I'd like to say real quick, tomorrow, of course, is going to be the Freedom of Information Day, you know, with Twitter. We should rename that day to Freedom from Wokeness Day. But I'm calling because this is with Fetterman and the election, this is classic bait and switch. Now, he's just a placeholder.
I know what you're saying, Mike. They think it's going to be his wife that takes over. That's the rumor.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The first day that I'm in office, I'm going to declare a crime emergency and suspend Castle's bail and these other pro-criminal laws because there is a crime emergency. My opponent thinks that right now there's a polio emergency going on, but there's not a crime emergency. Different priorities that I'm hearing from people right now, they're not being represented from this governor, who still, to this moment, we're halfway through the debate, she still hasn't talked about locking up anyone committing any crimes.
Anyone who commits a crime under our laws, especially with the change we made to bail, has consequences. I don't know why that's so important to you. All I know is that we could do more.
You don't know why it's so important to you. It's the foundation of all the lawlessness in the city and almost every major city that's adopted this same crazy go to town with your criminal behavior. Same thing in Chicago, same thing in Philadelphia, same thing in San Francisco, same thing in Los Angeles. And it's almost as if the Democrats have just removed themselves from any type of danger that the average American is feeling, the average New Yorker certainly feeling. Laura Curran joins us now, former Nassau County executive, a Democrat, and host of Cut to the Chase with Laura Curran. Laura, you were somebody almost a year ago who said that Democrats are in for an awakening of the midterms because it happened to you in the off-year election, right?
Right. I came on your show on Fox to talk about this, and it was January 2nd. And I got a lot of, shall we say, anger directed my way from some of my brethren in the party. But I really wanted to serve this as a wake-up call. You know, I think sometimes politicians spend a lot of time listening to the consultants, looking at the polls, when really you have to listen to the people. And, you know, one thing that we had a very good record on when I was county exec was public safety. Safest community in America 3 years in a row, according to U.S. News and World Report. But the crime issue really hurt the Democrats in that off year. And as I say, kind of a canary in the coal mine, let's look at this, let's take it seriously. And I feel, you know, any chance I get, I'm screaming from the rooftops, do not underestimate this issue. It's a primal, visceral need to be safe. And if that's threatened, you know, people are going to look to their leaders and maybe look to dump the ones they don't think are keeping them safe. But it just, you know, I think the Democrats in general kind of got seduced by, ooh, Trump's numbers are terrible, let's talk about that, or Roe v. Wade, which, you know, was, let's face it, good for the Democrats. It's not the only issue that people are thinking about. So it's funny that here we are. I don't want to be right, but I fear that perhaps I will be. We'll see in a couple of weeks.
Right. I mean, absolutely. So now you have Nancy Pelosi running around the country saying, I'm for law and order. And you have other people saying, I was never for defund the police, but we seem to know better. And I remember Commissioner Ryder, Nassau County Police Commissioner, you work so well with, was out beside himself about the disaster of the bail reform. He said, you don't understand, we cannot get cases together quick enough in order to keep this guy, or mostly men, behind bars until a case can be built. The turnaround time is just not practical or possible. So now the result is a lot of people aren't even making the arrest because it's not worth it for them to put themselves on the line to make the arrest about somebody that's going to be let out again.
You know, when we talk about bail reform, the focus is often on cashless bail, but you point to the other aspect, one of the other aspects, which is the discovery time that prosecutors and other law enforcement have time to get their cases together. It's so short. And I think that's part of it's making it very frustrating and very difficult to bring cases and do it in a timely manner. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of prosecutors, a lot of blind prosecutors, ADAs, looking to do something else with their lives. And that's, you know, that's not good either.
Right. So what was your take on the Zeldin-Hochul debate?
I think the day before, or the day it was going to happen, I talked to a lot of people just randomly. You know, I like to see what people are thinking out there in the world, post office and the bank and whatever. And a lot of people were looking forward to the debate to make up their mind. And usually people have already made up their mind by the time the debate comes along. I don't know if either candidate changed anybody's mind. I don't know if anyone in the middle thought, you know what, I'm going to go one way or the other. I thought they both did what they had to do. I do feel, Zeldin was very amped. He seemed extremely caffeinated and really passionate and excited about what he was talking about in a way that some people found a little bit off-putting. And I think Hochul was perhaps a little too cautious in talking about her concerns about crime. I think in her heart, she is a moderate Democrat, but perhaps, and I haven't spoken to her about this, perhaps she is concerned about the base and making sure that Democrats actually come out and vote. Because it's crazy that this race is so close at this point. Democrats have more than 2-to-1 advantage in registration to Republicans, and I think everyone just assumes that Zeldin was going to lose. Obviously, that conversation has changed. There's a lot more excitement and money coming into him right now, and I don't know if those folks in the middle of Hochul actually worked to change their minds. I mean, when asked about Alvin Bragg, she was, you know, he was duly elected and then pivoted to January 6th.
Understood. Laura Curran with us, former Nassau County executive. Laura, give people a perspective around the country how big Nassau County is.
So Nassau County, if we were a state, population-wise, there would be about a dozen states smaller than us. So it's the size of a respectably sized state. And it kind of mirrors the demographics of the rest of the country in terms of racial, ethnic, religious backgrounds. We got a little bit of, not really rural, but, you know, very sort of woodsy, lovely. We have sort of urban vibes. We definitely have suburbia. It kind of reflects the country. And, you know, I think what we saw in Nassau County is something we could see writ large in a couple of weeks. We'll see.
It's almost a purple area, right? It's not too red. It's not too blue. It can go either way. Bruce Blakeman beat you this time. You won last time. And he was a Republican stalwart for a long time. But the corruption got so thick, it opened the floodgates for an honest person like you to come over and just say, can we get this budget straightened out? Can we stop stealing from the till? But you're almost a victim of your party. Like Glenn Youngkin was able to pull off an upset. Bruce was able to upset you. So, Laura, you're sitting here as somewhat of a moderate. Governor Hochul's from Buffalo. No one's really from the city. So when you talk to Governor Hochul, do you think she understands the diversity of the state?
I think she does. I think being from upstate is helpful for that. She's not locked into the city bubble. But my concern is that her consultants have given her bad advice. And I think, you know, the Zeldin had a zinger about, you know, the Rose Garden strategy. How's that working out? And that's kind of inside baseball. But the Rose Garden strategy has been, you know, she's been going to ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings and doing, you know, regular governor stuff to show that she is the governor, when perhaps being more of a campaigner, really being out there having rallies, getting labor going, getting the base going, might have been a better decision. Of course, it's easy for me sitting on the sidelines. It's 2020 hindsight. But sometimes you can get locked into that consultant bubble and that pollster bubble, and I think that's what's happened here.
Well, I think that's 100% right. The other thing is you let the mayor and governors fight. If I'm the governor, I get involved in that. As illegal immigrants were bussed here, because why should border cities be the only ones to pay the price for the president's ability to decision to open up our border wide open? And when he left those, when he's telling the Arizona governor to get those containers off the border, that's helping them block and funnel illegals to at least one area. You understand where he stood in that, and I think a lot of city dwellers are upset because their lives are a mess because so many illegals and homeless are overwhelming the shelters and are all over the streets. And it's not, look at, woe is me, they can't make rent. This is a lot of violent people who should be in jail or institutionalized are now open season on the average American. So when Governor Hochul in particular, do you sense within the Democratic ranks there's a Cuomo faction working against the Hochul faction because they seem to hate each other?
Yeah, I think there is some bitterness there from what I've gleaned. The other interesting thing is the role of Mayor Adams. So it seemed in the debate, both Zeldin and Hochul were trying to claim BFF status, you know, and I get the sense with Mayor Adams, who's going to help him more, who's been with him more, who's more supportive of him. But I feel in reality, Adams has kind of been left on his own to deal with a lot of these issues. He was handed a bag of crap when he got into that office from the previous administration, and, you know, the crime issues, and then he's got this federal problem. You know, people are looking for local leaders to fix the immigration problem, but that's really a federal issue, which a lot of people I speak to think that the Biden administration has just failed at. And then there is the Cuomo faction. I think, you know, I don't know if there would be schadenfreude. I don't think any Democrats want Hochul to lose, but maybe if Cuomo was still here, maybe he could be tough enough to squelch the Zeldin guy.
So you remind me a little of Tulsi Gabbard, a little of the type of person, the moderate, that's trying to get people's attention. Here's Tulsi Gabbard who decided to leave the party. Just talking about the progressive wing of the party who just seems to be separate from the other Democrats, and especially when it comes to Ukraine. Cut 38.
These so-called progressives did a very simple thing that apparently can appear to be brave in Washington these days. In that letter to President Biden, they just told the truth about how this ongoing proxy war with Russia is increasing in cost and consequences, both on the Ukrainian people, but also the American people here at home, and how it's negatively impacting gas prices, increasing inflation, and so on.
So they got rebuked by the party. There's people on the Republican Party who are against this, are against continuing to fund this conflict. Well, where do you stand, Laura?
When it comes to Ukraine?
Yep.
I think we have to stand for democracy. I think it's really important to support Volodymyr Zelensky and the people of Ukraine against this bully, this thug, who for some crazy messianic reason thinks that this country is his and it's not. And I think, you know, I think our role still is to defend democracy home and abroad.
I agree with you. I'm with it. It's going to be into split, especially after the election. We'll see what happens. President Biden's got an interesting take about a handle inflation. Blame Saudi Arabia for the price of oil. Blame Vladimir Putin for the price of energy. Blame Republicans for not going along with anything. And now he's got somebody else to go after. People with fees. Cut three.
One of the key things I've asked the council to take on was the unfair hidden fees known as junk fees that are taking real money out of your pockets, real money out of the pockets of American families. Things like, as been mentioned, surprise banking overdraft fees, excessive credit card late fees, hidden hotel booking fees, or those huge termination charges to stop you from switching cable and internet plans to a better deal.
The hotel industry has pushed back. Obviously, they've been through hell through the pandemic. They basically, so many went out of business and so many major corporations still haven't recovered, saying that they're not hiding fees, they're all transparent. What about this strategy?
I think it's everyone can relate to these fees who read their utility bills and cable bills and all the small print. But I'm a little bit concerned about the need to constantly blame. When you are a leader in business or in your household or in government, you know, you're it. You're the one in charge. So casting the blame here and there, I guess it's appropriate sometimes, but you can't always do that. It's not always somebody else's fault. Sometimes things are your responsibility and you have to talk about what you're doing. Now, in fairness, Biden is pointing at a problem. He's saying what he wants to do about it. But I do see, and this is with both parties. I mean, this is a lot of elected officials. It's casting blame, saying, oh, it's not me or it's this one's fault and that one's fault. So let's hate this person or that person. This culture of blame is not helpful. I don't think it's very healthy either.
Prediction?
Who? In which one?
First in the Senate. Do you believe there's momentum going a certain direction?
Yeah. You know, if you asked me a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I would have said 50-50. Now I think we're going to be 51-49.
For Republicans or Democrats?
I'm going to say for Republicans. One thing that I would caution voters, there's really big differences when you're voting for your legislator, for Senate or Congress, or for a governor. Governor is the one who's actually going to be running things, who's actually going to be operating the government. And that's incredibly important.
Absolutely. Vote one, come one, come all. If there's anything good about the passions people have right now in politics, everyone's voting more than ever.
Thank God. When you vote, you have accountability. So I don't care who you vote for, but let your voice be heard and you will be listened to.
The former Democratic Nassau County Executive, Laura Curran, thanks so much for joining us. Check out our podcast, Cut to the Chase with Laura Curran. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Brian.
When we come back, we'll finish up with your calls. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So don't forget, by the way, you could see me in person. It is a thrill. Just ask Allison and Eric in Bayshore, Barnes & Noble tonight at Long Island, Bayshore, New York. Go to Barnes & Noble. You can actually get tickets ahead of time, but I'll be able to personalize, sign, and speak. And then on Saturday, be in Rochester, New York. And don't forget, check out my website, BrianKilmeade.com. I'm going to be in Scranton, Pennsylvania, too, 1 week from this Saturday. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Brian Kilmeade's New York Times bestseller, The President and the Freedom Fighter, is now out in paperback and has a brand new afterword. Go pick it up today, wherever books are sold. More of Kilmeade coming up. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'll see you tonight in Bayshore, Long Island, Barnes & Noble. In the meantime, I was just thinking to myself, I know a lot, but I think I need to know more.
More to know.
All right, here we go. Halloween canceled. 52% won't give trick-or-treaters candy this year. Many blame inflation. They've surveyed 1,000 people. 52% say what I just said. Out of these Americans, 1 in 4 blame inflation. That shouldn't come as much of a Halloween shocker since inflation rose 40 to a 40-year high. Previous studies have found that 3 in 4 Americans feel inflation interfered with their 2022 financial goals. 6 in 10 small businesses also fear that ongoing cost of living will ruin them. Also, I keep in mind the fentanyl thing is a problem. People are afraid that it looks like Nerds or Skittles. So we will another time, you know what? If Halloween's run out of gas, I think it should just be canceled.
Oh, my gosh. You're so just anti-Halloween. But I think this might also be, it's like a flashy headline. But let's be honest. Like, it's the neighborhood you live in depends on how many trick-or-treaters you get.
Right.
Like, some neighborhoods you get tons, others you don't. So when we live places where you didn't get trick-or-treaters, you might just not be buying it this year anyway because you don't get them anyway, so why spend the money?
Good point. It's hard to know what the trick-or-treater influx will be ahead of time.
Do you get a lot of trick-or-treaters in your neighborhood?
Never seem to be home.
That conveniently. People
you know,
are like,
I do.
I
do. Absolutely.
You do. That's good then.
Next, turkey prices are 73% higher than last year. The ongoing spread of bird flu will likely affect the price. Right now, per pound, 8 to 16 pound turkey, $1.99 up from $1.15. Typical bird flu spreads from colder months, but this year, commercial turkey producers reported cases of avian flu in July, the time when farmers are raising flocks in order to behead them and kill them just for you. Already, 46 million birds have been affected by the bird flu. I didn't even know the birds got the flu.
You didn't know the bird, you didn't hear about bird flu? No, I feel like people are using any headline. Just this is the reason why things are more expensive.
Next, Elon Musk's Twitter takeover close at hand as banks begin to turn over $13 billion of cash. Banks have handed that over because they promised to finance this Twitter takeover. The latest sign, the $44 billion deal with the social media company is on track to close. Meanwhile, he is expected to attend a variety of meetings this week at the social media company and fire a whole bunch of people.
And did you see the video he tweeted of him bringing in the sink?
Yeah, he brought in the sink. Get it sinking in. Yeah. Next, Queen Elizabeth's sweet note to Prince William revealed. The correspondence composed by the Buckingham Palace said, William, I hope you enjoy opening this each day from Granny. The Queen's note was shared on Twitter by the Royal Household Mail Company. So what does it say? The show note reads, I hope you enjoy opening this each day. I don't know what she means. How many letters did she give him?
Because in the first bullet point there, she gave him an advent calendar. And that was the note that.
That's it?
It's just a sweet note.
Oh, I thought it was like something more substantial. I couldn't wait to get past the headline.
I know. I think it's just the point that they still valued the small things.
Right. Harry got nothing, right?
The spare.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.